So tonight, we are up to, as we've mentioned in the past, when you get a surname that's a curse, you know it's never good, right? So you can get a curse, Yimach Shemoy, never, not too nice and quite deserving. So we're up to Shabtai Tzvi, Shem Rishoim Yirkov. The name of Rishoim shall rot. And we hope he rots. We hope he definitely was one of the biggest pitfalls in Jewish history that ever happened. And that ever happened, ever could happen. And he was just in the right place at the right time doing the wrong things. And he had lots and lots of people following him. So just, again, one disclaimer that there are so many books, so many historians, and so many people who have spoken about this topic, and if I've seen any good stuff, I will refer you to them, and I'm just coming to give a backdrop of perspective, when it happened, why it happened, and how it had many, many, many effects to many, many Gedolim. Most importantly, which we're going to get to, Rinus and Eibschitz and Ryakov Emden. It was all predicated on Shabtai Tzvi and his terrible, terrible effects. The Ramchal, we're going to speak about the Ramchal one week. The Ramchal and what they put him through. He went through the ringer. He really went through the ringer, the Ramchal. They forced him to sign that he's not going to have any Talmidim and he's not going to make any Svarim. Why were they so afraid? The answer is Shabtai Tzvi. So, How did this all start? So, there's two very, very important things that led up to Shabtai Tzvi. One was Tachvatat. Tachvatat, 1648-1649. Chmelnitsky comes and kills everyone possible. Everybody possible. And people were so downtrodden and so lost and forlorn, any pick-me-up is really, they're almost in danger of being swept up by negative influences, because they are so susceptible because of their hardships. So this is right on the heels of, not so far after, he was born 1655, if I'm not mistaken, and I have to check this. Yeah. So also show and tell before we begin. There's a sefer, an unbelievable sefer. Unbelievable. It's called Meshiche Hasheker Umisnag Dehem. False messiahs and they're the people who oppose them. So look, okay, so this book,
whole book's worth.
This book has about 700 pages. Okay? There were many. There were many, many. Now, there's a difference between an unsuccessful Mashiach and a false Mashiach. Because Bar Kochva's in here. Bar Kochva, Rebbe Akiva, not Rebbe Akiva Eger. Rebbe Akiva, the Tana, held that he was Mashiach. There's Tanoim, there's conditions of being Mashiach. From David HaMelech, fighting wars, there's signs, he's a Navi, he's a Balmides, because we only have Nevuah if you have worked on and perfected your Midos, right? Ayin Shmona Prakim, see the Rambam Shmona Prakim, and so many things that are prerequisites to being Mashiach, and Bar Kochva had them, okay? It wasn't meant to be. He was an unsuccessful Mashiach, and, okay? You can call him Mashiach HaSheker. Again, someone can call it semantics, others will say it's a world of a difference. But the two have no one. We won't say no one. Rabbi Akiva did not come out and say Shabtai Tzvi was Mashiach. Right? It's just not possible, eh? But second of all, he definitely was up to many, many things that are not so desirable. That's number one. Number two, and with this, is really the trickiest part. Because we could all sit here right now, and we have the beauty of history is that everyone gets to study history in retrospect. And it's so easy to just sit, yeah, that was a pitfall, and that was a mistake, and they should have seen better, and I would never have done that, and how could they have been so blinded? And everything's in hindsight, because that's what history is, it's hindsight. And in hindsight, it has a lot more clarity than when you're in it. Someone one time lent me a book, The Memoirs of Glickle. Glickle, spelled with the U and the two dots. What's that called? Yeah. Again?
Umlaut.
Umlaut, thank you. The U and the umlaut. It's Glickle. Glickle. So The Memoirs of Glickle is about this woman. It's one of the oldest writings from that time. A woman who wrote her memoirs from the 1600s. It was written in German, translated. They sell it. It's around. You can get it. Someone in KTT lent me the book. I mentioned this before. Yeah, I love it. I read some of the book, and she writes, just to like give you an inkling. Yeah, so my father-in-law lives in Germany. He sent us a shipment of all of his stuff from his house, because he's going to Eretz Yisrael, because Mashiach's coming. Shabtai Tzvi. A one-liner. And this is one of the hardest parts, because the outcome on the ground, forget the leader and his prophet, the outcome on the ground is that people were inspired, people were on fire, people were learning, people were davening, they were giving up their houses, selling everything they had to go make aliyah, to greet Mashiach Tzidkenu, who's alive, and just literally no more Lashon Hara, more tzedakah. So when you're going to come, right, let's say you'd be a Rav in the times of Shabtai Tzvi. So what would you say? Stop it! Go speak Lashon Hara! He's not Mashiach! People were growing, they were becoming better because they thought Mashiach was here. Now, new discussion. What was he up to and what was he about? Different discussion. But people were really growing and changing, which makes it so, so hard. And one other difficult thing is, we're going to get to it as we're going to send out. This is a disclaimer and then introduction, and then we're going to see how it plays out. When something happens that's well beyond our ability to grasp, right? Let's take the ultimate example. Lahavdil elef alfei avdalos yoim v'layla. They have nothing to do with each other. When the Ribbono Shel Olam meets out a certain smiting, and we have no idea why that happens. This is the age-old question. Russia, B'toiv lo yitzadik, V'ra lo yitzadik, yeah. Why is that happening? There's an inability to grasp it. So, that's when Emunah plays. That's when the muscles of Emunah and B'tachin are flexed, because I cannot grasp what's going on. So, these topics, right, were so esoteric and were on such Kabbalistic, you know, echelons, the average person couldn't weigh in. So either you believed or you didn't. And that was it. So you were flexing Emunah. No one had any clue what was going on. No one had any clue why he was able to do what he did. But he had a prophet, which, by the way, if you ever want to be Mashiach, you must get a prophet. What? No. He had a special prophet. Isn't that cool? You must get a prophet. Anyone who's planning on being Mashiach, get yourself a prophet. What? Yeah, the prophet, they worked in tandem, and you have to have it, because if he got down and said, I am everything, but when a Navi is misnabe, like, okay, they used to have Yeshayo, and now we had Nosana Azazi, Yimach Shemoy, Shem Rishayim Yerkov. Yeah, so that's definitely, it's such a hard thing. So we're going to sit here being like, these Jews of the 1600s, what were they thinking? What would you have done if you were there? So I don't want to, you know, cast on Klal Yisrael. This person, trust me, Rosh Hamarusha. But on Klal Yisrael, it's very hard to say, oh, so foolish, they didn't see the writing on the wall.
It's also harder because, like, they never, I'm saying nowadays, not even like you look it up, like you could see pictures and videos, and it, like, which maybe it's harder. Then there was this concept, there was a name. But you didn't know anything. It's not like you ever met the guy. I'm saying if you were living here, it's not like you never met the guy. Or
yeah,
you
met it was a shmua. So you heard Mashiach's here, so you chose to believe it or not. So who was Shabtai Tzvi? So Shabtai Tzvi was a young boy born on Shabbos. That's why he was called Shabtai, which is a very common thing. He was born on Shabbos, so he's our Shabtai, right? Shabtai Tzvi. He's born on Shabbos. He was born in Turkey. He was born in Izmir. And his father was Mordechai. Mordechai, surname Tzvi. Okay? Mordechai, with the last Mordechai, Mr. Tzvi, his first name was Mordechai, had a son Shabtai, who was called Shabtai Tzvi. So, he's born. I heard interesting things, right? Because many of the conditions we have today didn't exist. They were not classified. And they might not exist in the future, right? So I've heard people describe that, you know, he had a condition. Which, these things are always hard. They say these things about the Shvatim too, right? They had a condition. Those people who say those things, you have to be very careful. But they claim that he was a very, very enigmatic and charismatic and excited and sometimes very, very secluded. And when he was excited, he was like so engaging. And when he was secluded, he was extremely secluded for weeks on end, didn't speak to anyone. That's right. So if anyone sat down with a therapist today and described that scene, so we would have names for it. We would have conditions. We would have he has psychosis of sorts. He might be schizophrenic. He might be bipolar. It could be something, right? So I have no idea what he was, but it definitely was not the norm. Definitely not the norm. He was extremely, extremely gifted, which only makes it worse. He was extremely gifted. They say things that people, just his look, his eyes were so piercing, has a beautiful voice. He was extremely talented orator, and he really grabbed people. And as he was a teen, he already got smicha in Kushta, I believe, in one of the Torah centers of the time in Turkey. And that's when he started going and, promulgating? And being Mefitz, his godless. And it stemmed from, if Klal Yisrael is in so much pain and so much suffering, there must be some sort of a solution. There must be some sort of an Eitzah. And he meets up with Nathan HaAzazi. Nathan HaAzazi, Nathan from Gaza. Right? From Gaza? Aza. Nathan HaAzazi. Nathan HaAzazi was a tremendous Talmud Chacham. Shabtai Tzvi was as well, but much more of a focus on Kabbalah. Nathan HaAzazi was a top-notch Talmud Chacham, Mekubal, and they meet up in Yerushalayim. Okay? The rumors already start while he's in Turkey, and as he gains acclaim and gains, yeah, he starts belittling his rebbein. One red flag. Not a good thing, right? He was ordained by certain rabbonim, Rav Kubo, or I think Rav Malko, a bunch of big Turkish rabbonim at the time, and they started sniffing that something's up, something's off, and one by one, he took them all down, and he said, no, they don't understand. I'm on a different plane, different level, and he ends up leaving. They put him in Cheirim, which again, another red flag. When a Talmud is put in Cheirim, do you follow that Talmud? We assume that he gained his acclaim from his Rebbeim, and those very Rebbeim saying something's off, and people still follow. And he leaves Turkey, he ends up going to Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, he ends up meeting Nathan HaAzazi. And Nathan HaAzazi, and he, I don't know who could answer to know if was the whole thing contrived, was the whole thing premeditated. Did Nathan HaAzazi really hold he was Mashiach, or he felt he would be able to go and use this to benefit everyone? And Nasan Azazi says, I have met Mashiach. I, Nasan Azazi. Now, just to put it in perspective, we spoke about in passing, in the past, one of the first yeshivas, the first Rishon Lezion, the first Rishon Lezion of Eretz Yisrael, was a Moshe Galanti, Harav HaMagen, that's what he was called. Harav HaMagen was Mishpacha with the Kapis Tamarim, and he was the Rebbe of Rabbi Yaakov Chagiz. He ended up becoming Rabbi Yaakov Chagiz's father-in-law. Rabbi Yaakov Chagiz, the father of Moshe Chagiz. Rabbi Yaakov Chagiz took over the yeshiva in Yerushalayim. And one of Rabbi Yaakov Chagiz's biggest talmidim was Nasan Azazi. He was a real Talmud Chacham. There's no one doubted Nasan Azazi's gedula in Torah, in Kabbalah. His course of action, his choice of actions, very, 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 not debated, very questionable, very wrong. And he goes and he supports this Shabtai Tzvi. He comes into Eretz Yisrael, and the alarms have not been sounded yet, and they make him the Shadar, the Shlucha de Rabbanon, the Shlucha de Rachmana, the fundraiser for the Yishuv in Eretz Yisrael. So he's just gaining more acclaim. And Nasan Azazi starts, goes and he says that this guy is Mashiach. And this is where the trouble begins. Because if you go and you work on a different plane, everyone in this room works within the framework and is confined by Shmiras Torah and Mitzvahs. The Torah says this is Usser, this is Mutter. And if any of us would get up and say, no, it's totally fine cooking on Shabbos, right? We would be alarmed. We'd be alarmed. But when you work on a different plane and you are in esoteric levels, that cannot be grasped. So, no. For the regular people, they follow the 613. But the tikkunim that are going to be accomplished on the higher planes, you can't even grasp. I, Nasan Azazi, am telling you, it's okay. And whatever he does, he explained. He had a Navi who would explain and explain away every one of his actions. So when anything got fishy, there was an explanation. When anything turned out to be off, so you had a Navi going and saying, it's fine, don't worry about it. The reason why you're allowed to eat on Tisha B'Av, he made a bracha. Matir Isurim. Right? I always thought it was a yeshivish joke. And they say about a Rav who's too big of a makel. Oh, he's a Matir Isurim. They claim that Shabtai Tzvi, when he ate on Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, and eventually on Tisha B'Av, and eventually on Yom Kippur, he made a bracha. And Nasan Azazi defended him, saying, no, this is the tikkun, because Mashiach's coming. He's here. So what are you going to say back? Just in defense of Klal Yisrael, what are you going to say back? How could you not have known Nasan Azazi was legit? And I have no way to even weigh in. So this was part one. This is a difficulty in trying to understand what Shabtai Tzvi was doing and how he got away with murder, literal murder, and a lot more Isurim with the help of his henchman, Nasan Azazi, and to be continued.
Do we know how Nasan Azazi got convinced?